What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo, yo, yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another amazing edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. There's a lot of talk about AI in the marketplace. What about a dental practice? And what about security with AI? Everybody's using it, but what precautions should we take? Well, I don't know the answer, and that's why we bring on our regular expert, Travis Wentworth, who's truly an expert in this. And we asked him, what considerations should a dental team have when it comes to security in AI for a dental practice? So please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. The jam around here is to find the best thinkers, experts, anywhere in dentistry, share some thoughts to help you improve your practice and your life. We're going to do exactly that today with a regular guest I have on the show. His name is Travis Wentworth. We're going to be talking about security in AI. We've talked about AI, but today we're going to be talking about security in AI. Travis, thanks for being back, brother. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I hope that these topics are interesting and not going to bore you or terrify you, one or the other.
Well, I'm terrified. I'm definitely not bored when it comes to AI, but I'm a little terrified. And so if you're listening to the podcast, it's one of those things where AI is in the constant, it's a constant conversation, whether it be an actress that's been generated by AI. And recently, a lot of products have been peddled by AI celebrities, you know, like Oprah Winfrey and all these people that say, I didn't do that. And so I think it's got the world on its toes a little bit. You know, half of us are excited about what AI can do. And I think half of us are a little nervous about what AI can do. But Travis, you know, as we're shooting this podcast, it's December 2025. Give us a little, you know, first, well, let's do this first. Instead of talking about AI, I want people to know who you are before we talk about our topic. So give us a little intro. Who's Travis Wentworth?
Yeah, sure. So I am a cybersecurity and network infrastructure subject matter expert for the DoD. That's what I do in my day job. I teach, I don't know if I always mention this in my intros, but I teach the special operations folks a lot. I teach the special operations command, the SOC communities or the soft communities, special operations forces, mostly support guys and gals, right? So the support communities there out in like Fayetteville, North Carolina, or out in Honolulu, Hawaii every once in a while. I get to go and do those things, but that is my day job. I have an academic background, right, in engineering and data analysis as well, where my PhD is in chemical engineering and computer modeling of exhaust after treatment systems. And I did a postdoctoral research fellowship in that space as well. So I'm really interested in technology in general. I would argue that I'm pretty good at continuing to upskill in this space as it evolves over time. That is one of those things that I think is a real quality of PhDs in engineering that people sometimes wonder, like they send the folks with my background, PhD in engineering, actually tend to pop up in different spaces, right? And everyone's like, well, how did they end up here? And I think it's really a testament to what that educational component allows you to do, which is upskill, understand, digest, and then implement or explain in this case.
Yeah, I think another thing it's worth introducing to our listeners, you're also very involved in the dental community. Your wife is an amazing dentist in our community, and thus you have joined us. So you have an intimate knowledge of what happens in dental practice, right?
Absolutely. And we apply most of the stuff we talk about here, let's say AI, for example, in your dental practice, right? We apply these things. We utilize these services. And not only that, but, to be frank with you, when we talked about this topic, I was thinking about some of the things that we are thinking about applying in our dental office. I'll give you an example, which is, 3D printing and utilizing AI to help us do like slicing or 3D modeling of different things. Now, obviously, there are some things that you don't need a 3D model where you're actually taking digital impressions and whatnot. But there are some other things where you're like, oh, I wonder if I could make a model of this, and you could plug it into AI and say, hey, how should I take 3D slices of this? And it'll go, okay, well, this is the software you want to use. Do you want me to generate a 3D model for you? And then you can slice it out afterwards, things like this. So I'm thinking about how to utilize AI in my practice or in my wife's practice and the way that we help that workflow as well. So
yeah, and we're going to be talking about that. But let's go here first. Give us a little, where are we on the map with AI and why is security in AI so important?
Yeah, I'll talk about two things. And honestly, I think one of them everybody thinks about, and the other one I think not a lot of people, especially folks that aren't technical, think about. So the first one is, AI models, at least the way most of us use them, are remotely stored and utilized. That means that they're either in the cloud or in some AI infrastructure. And you've probably heard a lot about how these infrastructures are built and how we continue to need chips and RAM and all these other things, right? What that means is these companies are building large infrastructures to host and analyze your data. And now that sounds like a security problem, which it is, but it also is a benefit to you. That's why AI is valuable for you, right? These organizations and whatever the purpose is, and we can talk about different AI functions, right? We can talk about dental specific, or we can talk about an LLM like ChatGPT. Whatever the purpose is, what they're doing is they're aggregating and synthesizing data for you, and they're trying to synthesize that data and respond to your request as to the best of its ability. And so there are ways to do this, right, with larger models and open models like, ChatGPT, where it's not specific. They'll just take and continue to aggregate data about you as you utilize the model to give you better responses. If they're a specific use case, let's talk about like Pearl, for example. We talked about that off air before we started. Now, they have built an AI-enabled product that what they do is they actually prompt and teach that product themselves with data sets to continue to improve it for a very specific thing, right? Analyzing analytical data from your dental office. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. And so, these AI models, is security, as a dentist listening, like how big is security? We've talked about cybersecurity before, and you do have to make steps and measures. And I think last time we did a podcast, I have an insurance policy now on cybersecurity, which I never needed before. But let's talk about security and AI, and what would you say are the basics?
Yeah, so this brings me to that second point about how models are used. They actually have a second version of this, which are like locally hosted AI models, right? Where you can use, if you've ever heard of a utility called Llama, there's a bunch of self-hosted AI models. So you can, and there are organizations out there that are building utilities for you to self-host these models to be a little bit more secure. That's probably, in my opinion, beyond the scope of dental offices for the most part, unless you're a really big, hundreds of people or thousands of people, right? If you're a single practitioner or a couple of offices, you're not going to self-host AI models. But that is a more secure mechanism of doing this.
Wow. Okay. And so help me with what that really means. I mean, I'm not a very experienced user of AI in full transparency.
What it means is it's actually your hardware. So you download a piece of software, right? Open source software, which means that it is open and publicly available for use and actually auditable if you wanted to. Sometimes people think of that as more secure. And you run it on your own hardware. Now you can run it on a graphical processing unit, a GPU on your computer or whatever, or you could buy specific hardware for it, right? But realistically, people have run these on clusters of tiny little Raspberry Pis or Arduino. We know these little systems on a chip, they're not even huge devices at all, and they can run clusters of these models. One of the cool things that AI companies and open source AI contributors are doing is they're making it more viable for you to run them independently, meaning they take up less and less space, and they can run basically, they call them tokens, which is basically single inputs or kind of like word inputs or partial word inputs. They can run more and more tokens at less and less computational costs. So that's what an AI model does, and that's what it does when it's self-hosted. When it's remotely hosted on, ChatGPT or Google's Gemini or Perplexity or Claude, all of these are, right, they are utilizing huge data farms, and they are utilizing hundreds of billions or trillions of tokens, basically input sets that allow it to understand what you're saying and go and pull information from their data sets and pull them in and give you answers, for example, if you're using like a chat model. Okay, so security. Let me give you a couple security points. So there are a couple of really clear security points that we can just rip off the top here. Number one is, don't put any HIPAA compliant information into these models. They are utilizing your data, and any data that you put into them is that company's in perpetuity, and they can use it to train the model to make it better to answer to you, but they can also use it to train the model to make it better to answer anybody else. And so that data then lives in their infrastructure to some extent.
Yeah.
So that's important to know.
Can I ask you about that too? Because that's the only thing now, if you're using ChatGPT, just a simple model, now it's, what is it, 5.1 as of today, whatever. It's actually building a relationship with you, you know, on previous inputs. And so my second thought is, my first thought was, wow, this is pretty cool. It actually learns who I am, knows my family members' names and all that kind of stuff. And my second thought was, I'm horrified by what I'm putting in here because it's learning more about me and it's saving that information and could be used at any point, like I for whatever purpose. So, you know, your first step is like, don't put HIPAA compliant information, probably any personal information you wouldn't want anyone to know. Whether it be,
that was number two.
don't ever put your social security number in there, or I mean,
passwords,
right? Or
what are we? Yeah. Or, you know, like when you're, I don't know, let's say you're a dentist and you're like, you've got a database or something and it tells you to put this token in some spot. You've got a little interface and it says, put this token in this spot, right?
Right.
Don't go, like, it'll give you like a hex characters, a long set, maybe some slashes and ABC14, whatever. Don't put that token into ChatGPT and say what to do with this, right? That's a private token a lot of the times, right? So these are some things to think about. And if you don't know, the answer is always don't do it.
Don't
put it in there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. In one part, it's like they're building, like it's constantly learning and they're building a massive amount of information just on the other side of that. So don't share any HIPAA information. I mean, what would be likely cases for ChatGPT in a dental practice, just from your experience? What do you guys use it in your practice? Do you use
the number one thing that I love that it learns about is your, what I put in a lot is our core values.
Okay.
This is really kind of creepy, but right, I put in our five core values and I'll use it to help prompt me to respond to Google reviews, for example.
Right.
And now I don't like to use, and they will always say in terms of AI analysis, right? Just certainly don't just like put these prompts in and just file them into Google review responses, right? For just because they tend to be a little bit more sanitized and it's very easy to determine. A lot of times they're getting better, but you can use them to prompt. Okay. So then I put more of my core values in, and I get better and better responses. So that's a really good one. How about more information about my dental office? So I say, hey, you know, make me an image that displays our location and a star on the map where we are relative to KCI Airport, because we're in Kansas City. And so now it's got my physical address. It's got the name of my office. It knows, I mean, I'm listing these off. It's kind of creeping me out, but it's true, right? It knows that the practitioner, we have a single practitioner, my wife, Dr. Patel, right? And so when I ask it to create me an email response for a giveaway winner to help me, you know, just format an email. It formats an email and at the bottom it says, sincerely, Dr. Patel and our team. And it knows that we like to identify our team as team members and not employees, right? And all these other things. And so it's getting better and better. So these are some examples of some of the things that I've used for. And one of the things I'm really liking, right, about my utilization of this tool.
Yeah. I actually, it's funny you say that because I use AI primarily for two reasons. Number one, for research. Number two, to generate ideas, like give me an idea for this weekend or something, or like I'm going to Madison, you know, what are the, my dad's been using it for travel. And so I'm like, you use it for travel? He's like, yeah, I just put it in there. And so it's amazing. And so for me, it's mostly reference things like that, but it does have a lot of uses. And I think the important thing you're trying to share here is like you still have to have some type of a security wall when you're using ChatGPT or any of these open AI sources, right?
Yeah. So two things. One, I wanted to share that I almost used ChatGPT to help me with topics for this AI conversation. And then I was like, you know what? I'm not going to use AI to give me AI topics to talk about.
Right. Yeah.
So I didn't do that.
Yeah.
But number two is the security wall. So one of the things that you may not have noticed when I was describing what I was putting into ChatGPT, for example, to give it context, that's what it's called, right? Giving context to these models, is I put in publicly available information. Right? Who the practitioner is at the office, where the office is located. Honestly, our core values are on our website. Those are publicly available. And so what I'm doing is, and now I'm giving it context as to how I want to use them and what my personal preference is in terms of warmth and things like this. But you'll notice almost everything that I put into these models and that I'm talking to you about putting in, especially for these, you know, chat models and response models like this, is all just publicly available information in the context in which I need.
Yeah. Another thing comes to mind is a lot of people have subscribe to these AI receptionists, and we've talked about this before. What are your thoughts on that and the information? Because that could be potentially, you know, specific information that can't be shared on those. And I would imagine those AI agents are trained on that, but like, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so you need to be aware of what you're using them for, right? So there are models that there are products that do this. And then you have to know which products apply to your situation. And so if you are working in a medical office, then these have to be HIPAA compliant models. And they will typically tell you that, right? And then you're like, well, Travis, how do these models become HIPAA compliant if they're run on, you know, hardware and they're keeping your data? Well, these models are built. So what they do is they use Llama or they use some of these other open source models. They train them independently on their own stuff and they self-host all of their own hardware. And so they say, this is our hardware. These are our tokens, and we don't store this personal information. And we have provable audits to show that this is going to be a HIPAA compliant infrastructure. And so you have to be aware and look for that auditing information, or, you know, maybe they don't publish the auditing information, but for the notation on their software. And then I'm hopefully describing to you here what that actually means. It means that they self-host the stuff. They're not putting it on public. They're not like, let me give you an example. You're thinking like, well, what does that mean to not be self-hosted? Right. So what would be an example of, right, that wouldn't everybody want to do this? So what a lot of companies do, and so you see every, like, it's like AI for your calendar or AI for, you know, travel planning and all these new products. What they're actually doing, most of them, is they are taking your requests, formatting them, and sending them to one of these large companies, to your Claude, to your Gemini, to your ChatGPT, and they're called APIs, application programming interfaces. And what those APIs do is they allow you to, you'll never guess, interact with the program, right? Mm. An application programming interface, right? And so what they do is they send those requests through ChatGPT's APIs. They send that to ChatGPT, get the response back. And when that response comes back, they format it and show it to you. And so that's an example of a piece of AI software that would not be HIPAA compliant, and you should not be putting that type of stuff into.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've had this, and anyone listening's had this experience. You know, you're talking to Alexa. We do use Alexa in our homes. Not much, but sparingly. But I've had doctors on here. Actually, Tom Hedge was on here recently, and he said he uses Alexa in the operatory. So he'll ask Alexa to change the HDMI inputs on his screens so that when he's taking a photo without having to touch anything, it'll automatically come up. But it's amazing, you know, and then my wife and I'll have a conversation and all of a sudden it shows up in our feed and we're like, whoa, how could we mention that? And like 10 minutes later, it's in our feed. I mean, I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist, but like, how much is AI listening to our general conversations?
All right. So there's two questions in there. One, let's talk about one, which is how much are physical devices listening to your conversation?
Right.
And then number two is, what is AI doing with it on the back end, right? Because your Alexa was, and they were using, right, these are like machine learning algorithms. The difference between like machine learning and AI is not that much, right? AI is basically an evolution of this stuff. And now I'm sure machine learning and neural network PhDs would tell you there's a huge difference. But realistically, right, these things are learning over time. So the first part is, how much are stuff listening to you, for number one? And I don't have a great answer, because even as cybersecurity experts, right? Well, what a lot of us will do is, and I have done this experiment as well, is you'll take a like a network sniffing utility, basically, and you'll listen to see, hey, what is this Alexa-enabled device sending when nothing's happening on it, right? And I will tell you, it's sending stuff. I don't know what it is, right? Because this is all data back to Amazon or whatever, right? But it is, things are being sent and recorded. Like, cybersecurity professionals have already proven this. So even though folks will say, oh, your stuff isn't supposed to be listening to you, we all know, right? Like, just colloquially, that when you talk about, you know, when my wife talks about buying new UGG boots or something like this, right? That, like, 3 minutes later, literally, or 5 minutes later, on my Instagram feed is UGG boots, right? And so, number one, that's happening. Okay. Number two is, you asked the question that I haven't thought a lot about, which is not common. So I'll give you credit for this, which is, like, utilizing you know, Alexa or some of these enabled utilities in operatories, for example, right? And now, so it's not sending that request to an AI model, for example, right? It's actually, especially with these simple requests, those are a little bit more like machine learning. Basically, they're taking a request type and saying, oh, HDMI input, change HDMI input, right? Request and response, as opposed to what do you think of this, synthesizing information. Those are kind of two different things, right? And so, I mean, it sounds like, right, that's an acceptable application to say, hey, change an input in an operatory. And for one, I think it's, you know, more sanitary. You're not touching anything or doing anything. It's nice and improves the workflow. And I don't think of it as, you know, that utility is listening to and uploading personal information or HIPAA compliant info. Now, I could be wrong on this, right? I don't have a lot of data to support my thoughts on exactly what is being recorded, but I will tell you, those larger companies are concerned with data breaches themselves.
Right.
And so they are probably not aggregating PII data and, for, you know, HIPAA compliant data if it's sitting in an operatory somewhere, as a function of, like, you know, their own security protocols. And so what that's called is, it's called scrubbing data. And so they will scrub that data and filter that data for the most important things to them, which is, like, you know, advertising info or cues right at the start, Alexa start, and then you go do a thing, right? Something like that.
Yeah. And it's not unusual. I mean, we have quite a few dentists that use the AI transcription tools, which are supposed to be HIPAA compliant. I actually just went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor recently. I had an ear challenge, and he's like, he AI'd everything. And so he's like, do you mind if I record all this? And then he sent me, like, the summary of everything, and it was, like, instant. And so it's so interesting how all this is going. And I think the big piece is, like, you just got to cross your T's and dot your I's on this. I do want to go here because, Travis, like you with any guest who's an expert on something, you know, I always love to go in the future. It's anyone's guess. But, like, where is all of this headed? You're privy to a lot of conversations. We are not. So what does AI look like in a year, 2 years from now? And wrap in the whole security thing for us.
Okay. So you talked about your ENT using it, right? Our veterinary office uses it. Our dog had a bunch of vet appointments over 2025, and they were always using it in there. So the one thing I want to emphasize, and you've noticed I haven't said anything about not using AI-enabled products.
Right.
So it is a wonderful tool, and it is continuing to improve. So you asked where we're going in the sense of, right, it is going to be used. We are going to continue to use this. And to be frank, right, your ENT, this is a benefit to you. You're like, oh, that was a great summary. Even I didn't remember what you talked about and what questions I asked. You ever get out of an appointment, a dental appointment, or an ENT, and you're like, I know I asked about that, and it is important to me, but I don't remember the response. There was so much going on, right?
Right.
So this is really valuable. So I just wanted to point out, even in the midpoint here, or, you know, as we're continuing to flow through this data, that it's going to be more valuable in the future than it is today. So one of the things I think, you know, in terms of direction that I'd like to point out is that, you know, if you look at adoption curves, so what happens with tech is the adoption curves are exponential, number one, right? And exponential is a funny term. People say, oh, it's exponential, like up and to the right. That's not exponential, right? This is linear.
Yeah.
This is exponential, like bang, it was straight up, right? And so the adoption curves, as tech improves, basically become more exponential and more exponential, if that's a thing, right? So if you look at the adoption of, like, the cell phone or the phone, right? And then TV, and then the internet, and then the smartphone, right? If you look at those adoption curves, go out to ChatGPT and say, show me the adoption curves for different technologies, and list the phone, the TV, the cell phone, the internet, and then AI. And what happens is, as this technology becomes easier and easier to adopt, the curves just become more and more exponential. So people adopt them immediately. Like, imagine how many people are using ChatGPT right now, right?
For sure.
They didn't know what it was 24 months ago.
Right.
Imagine your grandfather, me and you, Kirk, who have older grandparents and people that, right? Imagine them adopting the smartphone in 24 months after the smartphone became publicly available.
Right.
It would have been insane. Right.
Right.
So be aware that the adoption curve is very steep in terms of who's adopting. Everyone's adopting it, which means that if you don't, you're going to be behind. That's right. What I really want to point out is that, like, you know, you're like, I don't know if I need it. And does it really help with productivity? Number one, it does. Right. Mm-hmm. It takes the mental burden for the mundane. That's one of the best things that AI is doing right now for us.
Agreed.
And it takes the mental burden of the mundane off of our plate. And if you are a high producer and a high achiever, right, the dentists that are in the ACT program fall into this category. You and I fall into this category. If I can take the burden from that mundane mental tasks off of my plate, that leaves more time for me to be productive in the spaces that I am most valuable in. And so I think that AI is going to continue to eat that. I think that's the, like, you know, the crux of it, right?
Yeah.
And what does that look like? Let's see. So I think that people are going to continue to use it for, right, their, you know, kind of their go-to to start tasks, go-to to get information on. I think that the models are going to get more and more efficient, right? You know, you ever notice that you see, like, your whatever hardware you buy, a computer, a laptop, a cell phone, and it says AI enabled, right?
Yep.
It's like AI enabled X, Y, and Z. What they're saying is, these chips are optimized to some extent for AI workloads. And then your next thought is, Travis, I thought you said it was like a remote service.
Yeah.
Well, what happens is you can synthesize locally and then send the rest of that request to a certain location, or you can do certain tasks locally. Like if I were to, you know, click on the local, right, speak to my phone and ask it to, like, answer me, right? That's actually, essentially these days, it's like a little AI workload. So your hardware is becoming more AI enabled. People are offloading those mundane tasks. I do think, you know, when people talk about, like, work and stuff, right, it does affect those with the least amount of skill, because those are the tasks that are repetitive and mundane to some extent. So, like, it is certainly, you know, it's going to certainly, you know, take the jobs of people who are, like, doing transcription, for example, right?
Yeah.
So there are some things there, but I think it's just going to continue to eat a lot of those mundane tasks. Like, that'll be the very first thing, is just crush through all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, I think you're absolutely right. Not only the adoption of it, but with the future investment. I mean, up here in Wisconsin, anything is newsworthy. We're usually talking about the weather, but I would tell you that one of the hottest topics in news is the acquisition of land for data storage. Meta currently is investing $1 billion in a 700,000 square foot campus outside of Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. And people are up in arms. And so Wisconsin now has, it says, I'm just looking this up on ChatGPT, 47 data centers currently. And also there's another one for a $12 billion data center in Dane County that's up to 1,600 acres. So I think first of all, I don't even know what you would put in a 700,000 square foot facility. To
Can
house
I get some
data.
Insider info on that?
Yeah, please
I've got,
do.
And first,
it's a. But I did say billion. Like, they're putting, Meta is putting $1 billion into that. What's going in there, Travis?
So I talked to a network engineer about a facility of that size going up in upstate New York,
mm-hmm.
And I was like, so what does that look like? And the funny part about that is, he says, you know, these facilities, and this would make sense to you when I tell you, but are homogeneous. They're all the same, right? So they buy all the same networking infrastructure, they buy all the same racks, they buy all the same hardware, and they put it in the exact same configuration in just rows and piles of homogeneous configurations, right? And so, interestingly enough, they actually don't even need a lot of engineers to configure that infrastructure, because it's all the exact same configs on the exact same hardware for a half a square mile data center that is going in upstate New York. And so that's really what that looks like. And, you know, you're like, oh, that's, you know, interesting and wild, but that's the way it's going, right? The more homogeneous you can make these systems, the easier they are to configure. Last thing is, you know, actually it gets really easy, but when you're that big, when you buy that many chips at the same time, now you actually have to start worrying about, like, chip failure rates and stuff. Even though they're 1 in 1,000, you bought 30,000, right? So that means 30 chips are going to fail on you no matter what. So how do you identify those things? And anyway, we were talking about that at a conference a week ago. It was cool.
That's so cool. I learned so much talking to you, but let's come back to how this applies to dentistry, because I have so many other questions that could take us off track. But like, what other things would you add just about basics and security and AI in today's world as it relates to a dentist?
Yeah. So the next one is you should have, and we talk about this in almost every podcast, is policies in place for use, right? And so the people, how people are utilizing that infrastructure. And you're like, well, you know, we could have some tech policies that say you can't go out to certain websites and this and that, but people are going to people, right? They're going to go around these things. They're going to use them on their phone. They're going to do X, Y, and Z. So my first thing, okay, so you said don't use HIPAA, right? Beware of HIPAA compliance. Don't put passwords in, this and that. Okay, well, that's the people in your infrastructure. Right. You should have on your books today, and you know, I'm thinking about this. This is going to be maybe a deliverable for us in the next quarter or two now that I think about it. But right, to make sure that we have policies in place that relate to security and use so that everyone in your infrastructure, specifically, right, your front office team and the people who are utilizing, you know, your PCs for more than just, you know, whatever tooth numbers and stuff, right?
Right.
But that you should have policies in place as to how to use this, and you should let them know what the acceptable use cases are and what they aren't, and just know that this is going to change over time. So you should set them now and say, hey, you can use ChatGPT to help you format emails, to give you ideas about giveaways at our office, you know, to do X, Y, and Z. These are the things that are acceptable. And I listed a couple here, and make sure that everyone is on that same page and make sure that they're adhering to it, right? Policies are only as good as the amount of people that adhere to them, and they need to be clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Travis, I love this. You know, I want you to share with our listeners a lot about your podcast, because you have a podcast and a YouTube channel, and you're going to continuously bring us new thoughts on cybersecurity. But before that, any last thoughts you'd give us for our listeners today on security and AI?
Yeah. So my thoughts are, know that you should start utilizing this if you're not, right? Yeah. So that's before I go security and make you scared, right? Right. Know that this is a useful tool, and it is an enabling tool, and it is going to continue to be adopted in the space, and it's going to make you better. And so if you want to be better every day, just like we want to be better every day here at ACT, right? Then utilizing this is something that is important. Number two is utilize it correctly. Right. So the security components we've summarized here: policies, you know, secure passwords, personal and identifiable information, HIPAA compliance. Right. Those should not be put into these public models. You should make sure that you do your due diligence on the front end and make sure that you know that these models are compliant if you're going to use them for, let's say, in-office transcription, or if you're going to use them to respond to patient requests or whatnot. Right. And so these are the starts. And this is where it starts in terms of AI, but I think that it's going to continue to eat things. It's going to continue to respond to patients via chatbots and schedule appointments, and you're going to give more control. This is what you were asking about earlier. You're going to give more control over your infrastructure over to AI over time. You are just going to do it, and you have to continue to be comfortable with that and be careful with it, right? So your AI chatbots are going to be able to schedule and put people on your schedule physically in your chair. It's going to happen eventually. Maybe you don't want it in your office, and maybe you're going to retire in 10 years before, but for all of us who are going to be here for, you know, a decade or more, it's going to happen. It's going to process credit cards for you. It is going to accept or decline. It's going to offer payment plans and going to check credit and do all these other things, right? And maybe they'll be independent apps, but it's going to start to get more integrated. So just know that this is coming, and we need to set the baseline. So those are my thoughts. I know it was a little long-winded, but AI is just such an open topic, and it's so important that we continue to utilize it for our productivity, but be aware of the security limitations as well as kind of the growth and the security limitations as we grow in the space.
Yeah, so well said, and totally agree. Now, Travis, tell them about your podcast and the YouTube channel that you have.
Yeah, so we started a podcast a couple months ago. It's called the Intelligence Quest Podcast. It's a monthly podcast. We're gonna release a few starting at the beginning of January here. And so we've started that. It's gonna be released on the YouTube channel, which is Intelligence Quest, which is our YouTube channel. We do cybersecurity and network infrastructure. It's for a lot of pros like me, but I have a couple on there that are, you know, related to our podcast. A lot of times I'll put one out related to our podcast. So I had 5 cybersecurity tips for small offices and things like this. And then finally, I am Travis IQ on our socials. I'm Travis IQ on Twitter and Instagram, and intelligencequest.com is the website.
Awesome, brother. I'm so grateful to have you on here. So grateful to call you my friend. And I'm telling you guys, Travis knows what he's talking about. So we're going to continuously have him back to keep us on our toes and be aware of what we need to know about cybersecurity and just other things way beyond my comprehension anyway. So thanks for being here, brother. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, Kirk. It's always awesome.
Awesome. Well, stick around. We say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening today. I hope you enjoyed that. If you did, do us a favor. Hit this share button. Share this with your friends. And because what that does is it allows us to be able to reach other people. We are now over 100,000 unique users for the podcast. I don't know how it's working, but we're going to keep bringing it with fascinating stuff. With over 900 episodes, we've got 9,000 more. So keep tuning in and we'll keep bringing it. So until we see you guys next time or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.